Jim Bice.
Welcome back to the Jim Bice Show. I was just listening to the Jim Vick Auto Sales ad, and Jim is going to retire at the end of the year.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why he's so happy on the commercial. Did you see how he was smiling on that last commercial?
Yeah, he's going to retire, and he's got about 60 units on the lot right now. And the thing is, no reasonable offer will be refused. Now, I'm a little disappointed. I made what I called a reasonable offer, and he turned me down. Well, he's got a Mercedes-Benz SUV over there that I kind of like. In fact, I really like it. And I just explained to him that, you know, since we're old friends and we go back a long ways and I'm concerned about him liquidating all of his inventory before he retires, that I would be happy to assist him. And I'll just take that Benz off the lot and take it to my house, and that'll alleviate his problem. But he had this silly idea that there's supposed to be some money involved in a deal, and I never mentioned anything about money. I just offered to help him. I thought that was reasonable.
What a way to lose it, to ruin a good friendship, to talk about money like that.
Really?
You know?
Really?
Oh, Jim's a great guy. I'm sorry. Well, congratulations if he's out there listening, Jim, on your retirement. Well-deserved.
Yeah, he's closing it down December 31st, and what he's trying to do is get all of the inventory liquidated, so... if you need a vehicle, I'm serious now. This isn't just sales talk. If you need a vehicle, go over to Jim Vick Auto Sales and talk to him, because he wants to move the stuff out. If you make him an offer that's even remotely in the ballpark, he's going to take it. You're going to be driving away on something you really want for a lot less money than what it would normally cost. So, go over and talk to him and tell him I sent you over, and tell him that just because he's retiring isn't going to make him any younger. Anyway, I want to get back. We got some really, really nasty stuff coming up that the legislature is inflicting on us. I'm going to let you kind of run with that a little more.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is Representative David Brock Smith again. We left with what the Democrats in Portland are calling for. They're calling cap and invest. I call it emit tax and fund special interest.
Right.
It's a $690 million annual carbon tax modeled after the California cap and trade.
Oh, and that's really worked out well.
Yeah. It does nothing to limit greenhouse emissions, which is what they're going for. Now, mind you,
And remember, this whole global warming thing is a scam from the get-go.
Yeah,
and it's a scam that's being perpetrated by the media and Democrats and the people that are lining their pockets out of it. What they're going to do, all of their proposals will have exactly zero effect on carbon emissions.
This is true. In fact, the climate's been changing for millennia, as we all know. In fact, it wasn't... 20,000 years ago, there was 3 miles of ice above New York City.
Yeah.
So the climate's been getting warmer, and we all know that. Oregon produces 0.14% of greenhouse emissions to the global climate scale. 0.14%.
So 14 hundredths of 1%.
That's correct.
So let's see, 1/8 of 1%, basically.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, I had the director of Department of Environmental Quality in front of me in committee 2 weeks ago during legislative days. And I asked him, I said, Director Whitman, and you're welcome to go to the Oregon Legislative Information website and go to that committee and watch this yourself on OLIS. I asked him, I said, since Oregon, I'm paraphrasing at this point, since Oregon produces 0.14% to the global greenhouse emissions, if we were to go to carbon zero in this state, how would it have a measurable impact on reducing the global greenhouse emissions and stifling climate change, in your words, sir? And he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing again, Representative, you're exactly correct. that Oregon producing 0.14% will have, and I quote, minuscule impact on the global climate scale. And so I have to say, Mr. Bice, that that happened. I got the director of DEQ to put that on the record before 9 a.m. on Monday.
Right.
So it was a great day. It was
that day. So basically what they're proposing is socking the taxpayers with $700 million per year to accomplish nothing.
That's correct. And that's why I call it the emit, tax, and fund special interest plan. Now, what they want to do is they're saying, oh, well, we're going to talk about offsets, because we know in the research, I've been involved with this because I have the philosophy, I'm the only Republican involved in this cap and trade conversation since the beginning. Senator Hansel was there at the first work group meeting, because my philosophy is we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
Right.
And so they want to give offsets to rural Oregon. But that's like they want to throw us a cookie as they're robbing the
rest of the state,
the rest of the store, you know.
Well, the problem is, even if they do the offset, it's not going to have any measurable effect on the rural areas, because most everything that we purchase in the rural areas comes from the more populated areas. We're still going to be paying for it.
Right. And for anyone who doesn't know what an offset is, it's the carbon credit theory, where if I buy trees in another area, I can use it to take my plane to Costa Rica to see hot models.
Kind of like Al Gore. Yeah.
Leonardo. Well,
and that's one of the problems with their conversations of offset. Just to go to the private timber owners, to be paid to have less of a frequency of harvest, so adding 20 years to the harvest. Well, we have companies within our area and within the district that, of course, all they do is go harvest timber for private companies and so forth. And so that would actually cut jobs in rural Oregon, because
of course it would.
Those stands would be harvested later, and therefore there'd be harvested at less frequency.
And the other part of it, let's say they get their way, we delay the harvest another 20 years on trees that should be harvested today, but we're not going to harvest them for 20 years. So we go down the road another 20 years, and then all of these enviro wackos slither out from under their rocks, and, oh my God, those are old growth. You can't cut those.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I got news for you. There's damn little old growth left in Oregon. What is here is already protected by the feds.
Correct.
So we can't cut old growth. So all of their arguments are crap from the get-go.
And one of the other problems with this, there's lots of problems with the cap and invest program. This $690 million is going to be coming from increased costs in your utility bill.
Right.
Increased costs in your transportation or fuel sector on diesel, gasoline, and propane.
Electric bills.
Natural gas, electric bills.
Oh, my God. How will the people with electric cars ever be able to afford it if the electric bill goes up? My goodness. Well, have no fear. I'm sure the Democrats in the legislature will come up with an offset to protect the people with electric cars,
I think they are, actually. You have to understand that Representative Barnhart is a diehard electric vehicle person, and he's from the Eugene area. And if he had his way, everyone would be driving an electric vehicle. And he would want everyone in Oregon to be driving an electric vehicle within the next 10 to 15
years.
Even the
people that live in the rural areas, you charge your electric vehicle and you can get just about halfway to your next point before it's dead.
Well, and that's one of the problems with the cap and invest, with this modeling it after. Now, there's, 28 million people in California?
Yeah.
We have 4.1 million people in Oregon. It's modeling a cap and trade program after California's failed cap and trade program is not the way to go. When I have arguments and discussions about this program, when we're in these work groups with the environmental for profit, nonprofit entities and others up there, the hard left 15% that
right.
that can't seem to reason, and you can't cut down a tree. One of my issues, and I bring up her example, is the First Tech Credit Union building that's being built up in Hillsboro out of CLT, cross-laminated timber, glulam right. beams, and so forth, largest in the state, is being built up there. Beautiful building, and all the beams, all of that sequestered carbon, because I right. talk about sticks and trees as sequestered carbon, because that tree is built with those sequestered greenhouse diesel emissions.
Right.
That's what trees are built with.
So it's a carbon building.
That's right. So that carbon building that's being built up there is being, you have timber that can be used to build that building just miles away, but they're actually trucking those timbers and those CLT and glulam beams from Vancouver, BC,
oh,
on diesel emitting trucks all the way up down to Hillsboro, Oregon, when we could be sequestering carbon in this state and replanting it and right. sequestering it for hundreds of years in these new buildings. But yet the environmental policies from urban Oregon, that is one of the reasons why I have the 8th most impoverished school district in the nation.
Right. And we're not far behind.
Won't allow us to utilize the natural resources that built our communities and are meant to sustain them. And here we have the budding cross-laminated timber industry that will assist in our middle class, working class, through the engineering jobs that are necessary for that. We'll bolster the Port of Coos Bay and the export potentials here out of the Port of Coos Bay. And we have mills across this great state that are ready to tool up CLT plants if they knew that they had the supply
right.
from the resources that we have out in the woods. Yet, I have 191,000-acre Chetco bar fire, right?
Yeah, what happened to all that carbon, by the way?
Yeah, exactly. That is some of the best timber around that we couldn't harvest because of those environmental for-profit, non-profit policies.
Right.
And yet, here we are allowing... in the initial burn, about 30% of the carbon is released.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then as it rots,
which it will do, because they probably won't allow salvage logging.
Actually, I've actually been very involved with the Chetco bar fire since, of course, as you can imagine, right. the beginning. And I have the forest supervisor on the phone in my Economic Recovery Council meeting. The governor appointed an Economic Recovery
right.
Council. And appointed me as the convener, as well as there's two in the state, one's up in Hood River for the Gorge Fire. Anyway, Supervisor Mac Warder was on the phone talking about how they're initially going after 13,000 acres of matrix lands for salvage, which is almost 7%, which is a
right.
far cry more than the 2% we got out of the biscuit. And that does not include the over 200 miles of maintenance road miles that they're
right.
going to be doing for road protection and doing harvesting and salvage off of that area. So we're looking at the potential of getting close to 10 to 15% salvage off the Chetco bar. And I've been working with, of course, my agencies at the state to make sure that we have any and all resources available, utilizing the Good Neighbor Authority, because we have to get through all the federal red
right.
tape crap. And so all of our ologists, if you will, archaeologists that
right.
have to do and so forth at the state are ready to assist the U.S. Forest Service in getting through that red tape. And then from the resources of the salvage and those receipts, we can then pay back our employees at the state for any help and time that they might provide.
Okay,
so we're hands on deck down there to try to get as much salvage as we can.
Now, that fire, I talked to Wayne Krieger shortly after that fire
mm-hmm.
got going, while nobody was still doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any progress being made on getting rid of the people that allowed that to happen?
I know that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners passed a resolution of no confidence for the district ranger and the forest supervisor.
Right.
I know Jackson County passed a similar resolution of not no confidence, but of disappointment, if you will. I believe that both the Coos, Douglas, and Curry counties are looking at similar resolutions of their own about forest policy.
Instead of no confidence, how about banishment from the state?
Well, you know, again, that's you have a manager Took that's now the he would be the U.S. Forest Service manager for the country under Secretary Jewell.
Right.
And so you have the potential with the makeup throughout that system now.
Right.
To have definitely impactful change for our rural communities, and I'm excited about it. And that end, that's one of the conversations that I've shifted this cap and tax, emit tax and fund special interest into is the fact that we're here talking about sequestering carbon and reducing greenhouse emissions. But how can you do that when you're not going to acknowledge the very greenhouse emissions that are released in wildfire?
Yeah.
And when you're talking about Senator Merkley and Senator Wyden's bill back in D.C., their fire borrowing bill.
Right.
I had a conversation with Senator Merkley, and I know that when with my relationship with Senator Merkley as far as our Sudden Oak Death Task Force that I created and that he came in to co-convene with me, there was some Rob told me that we had some discussions on this show, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But when it comes to their FARO borrowing bill, I told him that unless I'm adamantly opposed, because we can't give the Forest Service a blank check to manage fire.
Well, no.
And
we've seen how that works.
Exactly. But what we do need to do is we need true policy change. And you have the Federal Forest Resiliency Act in there, the Westerman bill, so to speak. The fifth time that a bill like that has been passed in this state that would increase harvest and manage our resources better. Because the conversation that I have in the building when it comes to cap and invest is if you want to say that the climate is changing and you want to say that we need to cap greenhouse emissions, even though we produce 0.14% in this state, but you're not willing to admit that if conditions are changing, so should the policies of the management of our timber resources change with them so that we can A, sequester even more carbon, and B, keep those wildfires at bay and mitigate the mega fires from happening.
See, I think you're making a mistake by even acknowledging that there is such a thing as man-made climate change.
I don't acknowledge man-made climate change.
See, I won't even use the terminology.
What I said is the climate has been changing for millennia.
It has.
And what I will also say, Jim, is conditions on the landscape are changing. If that's the case, the conditions on the landscape are changing is because we aren't managing our resources anymore. And once you manage it, we don't have 1,000 years or 5,000 years for Mother Nature to take hold.
Right.
Rural Oregon is losing its middle class at a more frequent rate than urban Oregon is. And these are the type of resource jobs that can come back managing our resource, engineers in the CLT industry that can help rural Oregon, save rural Oregon by bringing our youth back, because there's only so many bedpans in our area. And so I know we got to go to a break, but
something you might want to use when you're talking to these people on this cap and trade thing. They're borrowing it from California. Ask them, well, do you want Oregon to become California? Do you want to see our businesses flee to Texas and Oklahoma and all across the country because it's unlivable because of your silly programs?
Well, that's
exactly what happened to California.
And we call that leakage. Because there's no reason why...
It's not leakage, it's a hemorrhage.
Yeah, exactly. But they call it leakage because there's no reason why an industry, if it can pick up and move, doesn't pick up and move.
Yeah.
Because when you have a... See, that's why we can't model anything after California with regards to this sector, because what happens is California is large enough with 26, 28 million people, can't remember. And so if they have industries leave... There's still industries there.
Right.
Oregon doesn't have the ability to do that. Enter also, mind you, Cleaner Air Oregon that is the governor is trying to push and the director of DEQ is trying to push, even though the legislature in 17, and I had him again in front of my committee back in September and pressed him on the issue as he gave us a presentation for Clean Air Oregon. And I said, excuse me, Director, the legislature clearly chose not to fund this program that you're pursuing. Why are you continuing to do so? To which he responded, well, because we got a little bit of money in 16, we feel that it should be implemented. And so therefore we didn't need the legislature's permission. We're going to go ahead and continue the program. Right. And then we'll go ahead and ask for funding in 2018 or 19.
Which the Democrats will give them.
Well, which I was rather upset about, as you can imagine. But that's one of the problems, is the agencies are out of control. So one of the pieces of legislation, I'll let you know, and that we'll move in 19, is a bill that so many times our Oregon revised statutes don't... we have legislation that creates the Oregon revised statutes. They require rulemaking. And so what happens in rulemaking is the agency associated with and then the lobby get together and they hammer out what rules are going to be associated with that piece of legislation.
Which may or may not bear any resemblance to the legislation.
Correct. But the legislature is no longer in the loop at that point, unfortunately. And
it's just, well, this is just another case of the people getting the shaft by unelected people that spend your money without your permission.
So what?
I do got to take a break here. So let's take a break, and we'll continue the conversation on the other side.
At Gibbs RV in Coos Bay, we sell more RVs than anybody on the Oregon coast. And we're looking for nice, clean, pre-owned RVs to consign or buy. Want to get your RV sold without the hassle? Call Gibbs RV today at 888-3424. That's 541-888-3424. Local pickup and appraisal at no charge. And remember, we make house calls. Gibbs RV Superstore, 1845 Ocean Boulevard in Coos Bay.
Stop in today to the all-new one-stop gun shop, Hole-in-the-Wall Gun Shop in Coos Bay. Your area leader in quality firearms, Hole in the Wall Gun Shop proudly features the top brands of new and used handguns, hunting rifles, black rifles, antique and collectible guns, ammo, mace, and more. Gun cleaning and repair, expert advice, and handgun safety classes for concealed carry permits are offered too. So stop into Hole in the Wall Gun Shop across from Cumyon's on Highway 101 South in Coos Bay. We buy, sell, or trade.
Hi, Danny at Far West Tire and Auto. I was wondering how your tires are holding up on the wet, slick roads out there. If you are ready for a new set of tires, stop by Far West Tire and Auto, where you can get up to $140 back in rebates when you purchase four select Goodyear tires. Far West Tire and Auto on Highway 101 Coos Bay. Always the right tire, always the right price.
Roupon Exchange, located at 1980 Sherman in downtown North Bend, makes pawn loans on firearms, gold and silver coins, and jewelry. Roupon Exchange is also happy to buy, sell, and trade from their huge inventory of new and used firearms. And with their extensive variety of items, from tools, electronics, musical instruments, and more, Roupon Exchange is also a great place to shop for yourself or others. So stop by Roupon Exchange at 1980 Sherman Avenue in downtown North Bend, and let's make a deal.
In just a fast few minutes from right now, you can have life insurance for up to $500,000 without taking a medical exam and without leaving your home. We're Fast Life, and we're going to make this easy and fast. Odds are that you don't have enough insurance, or you're paying way too much for what you got, or you don't have any, and that's not good. Listen, nobody likes to think about life insurance, but we're grown-ups now, so call and protect your family. 1-800-254-9567, or go to fastlife.life. You've got insurance? That's great, but you may be able to get more coverage and pay less than what you're paying now. And with no medical exam, you can get it right over the phone, and that's fast. Faster than a speeding bullet? No, but fast. And we also said we make it easy. So call and get quotes, then submit an application over the phone, and that's it. And that's easy. Get approved, and coverage starts instantly. And that's fast. Faster than the speed of light? No, but fast. Call 1-800-254-9567 or go to fastlife.life. Fastlife.life. It's revolutionary. It's Fast Life.
If you run your own business, when you're not on the job, you're on the road. In your van. Signs that say detour and do not enter are just plain bad for business. Well, here's a sign that's great for business. It says 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance on Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or Metris vans. Powerful, capable, and affordable. That's Mercedes-Benz van power. With pioneering safety technologies and low total cost of ownership, Mercedes-Benz vans are the right choice for your business. Check out the full lineup of Mercedes-Benz vans starting at just $25,995. 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance. That's van power for all. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
Starting at price refers to base model Metris worker cargo van. Excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Please see your dealer or go to mvvans.com for further details and exclusions.
Are your medical bills piling up due to cancer or another serious illness? You are not alone. Many people face this challenge. Here's how Coventry Direct can help. You can receive an immediate cash payment by selling your life insurance policy. If you have $100,000 or more of life insurance, you may be eligible to sell your policy, even a term policy. To find out if you qualify, call Coventry Direct today at 1-800-510-2800 to speak to one of our policy specialists. That's 1-800-510-2800. The cash you receive from selling your policy can be used to help pay medical bills or whatever you choose to give you financial security and peace of mind. Call Coventry Direct at 1-800-510-2800 or visit us at CoventryDirect.com. Coventry Direct, giving you the cash you need when you need it most. Coventry Direct is a marketing company and will refer qualified policies to a licensed entity.
We all want more for less. Now your locally owned McDonald's is offering their McPick 2, where you can get two McDoubles, two McChickens, two Sausage McMuffins, or two Sausage Burritos for only $2.50 mix or match. Now that really is more for less. For a limited time only at your locally owned McDonald's in Coos Bay, North Bend, Walmart, and Reedsport.
We're back. It's the Jim Bice Show. There he is, Jim Bice.
Welcome back to the Jim Bice Show. I have Representative David Brocksmith in the studio with me. We're talking about some of the nonsense that's going on in the legislature, and I'm going to kind of turn this back to you, David.
Well, thanks, Jim, and I appreciate Rob being here as well. We were talking about a piece of legislation that I'm going to be moving forward, the 19, and how agencies are out of control. And up in the state, especially Department of Environmental Quality, we talked about how they're out of control with cleaner air Oregon a little bit. And
now, doesn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems I read something not too awfully long ago that Oregon is one of the five states with the cleanest air in the country.
That's correct.
Okay. So we've got the cleanest air in the country, but it isn't good enough for the enviro pukes. Is that it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, what happened, if you remember the glass plant up in Portland, they found various emissions from the glass plant by harvesting lichens or moss on trees. And then, of course, there was this huge outcry, and then politics took over, unfortunately, and now this is what birthed Cleaner Air Oregon. We do have some of the cleanest air in the country, and yet they want to overregulate once again, DEQ does, with Cleaner Air Oregon, after the legislature chose not to fund it, because the legislature doesn't feel that we need to spend more money on Cleaner Air Oregon when there's already regulations in DEQ's arsenal that could have protected those people, yet they failed to do their job. And so it was misdirection, complete misdirection to the poor citizens in Portland. Rather than taking responsibility, rather than the governor taking responsibility that oversees these agency heads, she blamed it on basically, we need new regulations, and by God, I'm going to champion Cleaner Air Oregon when we already have existing laws that would have that protect those people. They just needed to be enforced.
And we're, you know, unfortunately, we're seeing this lack of accountability across the spectrum. You know, it and it's at all levels of government, all across the country. We the taxpayers pay big bucks. to have all these various organizations and agencies in place, supposedly for our benefit. And then we find out that, oh, well, we're giving them all this money, but they're not doing a job that we paid them to do. I keep thinking of that, that one deal where they, turned a river to total crap because they didn't know what they were doing. And the EPA disavowed any knowledge.
The Animas River in New Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but we're seeing that in a number of different agencies, state and federal, that, you know, they're charged with doing a job, and we, the taxpayers, give them plenty of money to do the job, and then they don't do it. So the plan is, instead of holding the agencies and agency heads accountable as they should be, oh, well, let's just put more money in it.
Oh, no, I held them accountable. I appreciate the agencies being in front of me in committee, because I ask them straightforward questions and expect an honest answer, and don't let them leave the dais until they give one.
Now, how often do they try to go sideways on you with that?
Oh, they do often. It depends on the agency. The state parks, for example, is one of the finest run agencies, in my opinion, since I've been in the legislature, as far as being approachable, accountable. Right. They have been and done.
They almost have to be, though, because the parks is one of those agencies that has direct, continuous contact with the public, whereas a lot of these other agencies don't.
And DEQ is the worst.
Of course.
And another thing that they're attacking, before we get into this legislative concept, I want to tell you about, is the DEQ is going after our seafood processors again. Hitting rural Oregon right in the gullet. After the timber industry, we have the seafood industry in our neck of the woods. And of course, the Environmental Protection Agency is moving forward new regulations with regards to processing and the water and,
right,
and different associated things with it. And rather than working with the seafood processors, working with the Seafood Processors Association through this year and a half process, they basically disregarded them. They went out to the individual seafood processors early on and talked to them ahead of time, and felt that that was enough before any of them had any information to get input from them, not throughout the process.
Right.
And they have, they're creating these regulations that are far and above exceed the federal EPA regulations that are necessary. And it's going to cost our seafood processors millions to attempt to comply.
Which equates to millions of dollars lost in taxable revenue from the employees.
Well, not only, you know, I mean, yeah, some seafood processors won't be able to comply.
I got a survey. Apparently it's a limited survey. They sent it out to certain people in certain areas. I guess it was at random, from the House leadership. And it had a series of questions on various issues, one of which was on Marine Reserves. And of course I knew it was a hokey piece of crap from the get-go, because all of the proposed answers have been prepared by them. So you couldn't give a real answer. But fortunately, at the end of each section was a comment section. And in the comment section, particularly on the Marine Reserve thing, I wrote in there, I didn't answer any of the questions. I just filled out the comment section. To the best of my knowledge, and I've done a lot of research, I have yet to see any hard science that indicates that marine reserves off the Oregon coast are either necessary or even desirable. And when I start looking at their excuses for establishing marine reserves, they were taking information from other parts of the world where the ocean conditions and other elements are totally different from here, and they're trying to apply they're comparing apples to oranges to justify I guess they want to expand Marine Reserves. Is that something that's...
No, there's no conversation that, you know...
Well, it was part of that survey thing.
Oh, well, I am, you know, so just a little history, Jim. I've been involved with the first Marine Reserve in Oregon off of Port Orford,
right.
The Redfish Rocks Marine Reserve, since its conception. It was community-based and driven. There was a community team that was formed. It's called the Redfish Rocks Community
right.
Team that kind of drove, because we were concerned when Governor then Kulongoski
right.
wanted to move forward with, you know, Marine Reserves off the coast of Oregon. We were concerned they were going to take over the Orford Reef that we have there, which is
right.
the most productive one. Well,
it's one of the most productive fishing grounds on the coast.
Well, and in the world, actually.
Yeah.
And so they chose Redfish Rocks. The community, again, chose.
Well,
so I've been associated with the economics of that.
Okay,
because
you may want to look into this, because the impression I got from reading the questions on that survey was that somewhere there's a desire to further lock down those reserve areas, so you can't even drive a boat across it.
Well, so there is no conversation at the Coastal Caucus level of adding any more marine reserves than the five
yeah.
that we
right.
have on the coast. And there was right. there was a push back when Sylvia Hayes and
right.
Governor Kitzhoffer was trying to move forward with a national marine sanctuary off
right.
the coast of off the coast of Port Orford, to which Rob, I know,
yeah, 22 miles. Let's
right,
1,300 square miles.
1,300.
Yeah.
Well, I meant the coastline
yeah.
for 22
yeah.
miles of the coastline.
And so I worked back then to get coastal ports, coastal counties.
Right.
I know Rob did to get resolutions of opposition. I did draft a piece of legislation, actually, that the governor refused to move. And so I'm hoping Newt Bueller will be elected, because we've already got a deal that he'll move the legislation.
God, I hope they come up with a better candidate.
Jim, well, I understand, but I can give you my point of view as I serve with him
all
in
right.
the legislature on why I support Newt. But with this National Marine Sanctuary stuff, the bill basically, Oregon has the ability to, it's the feds that come in to decide whether or not
right.
you're going to have. So in a nutshell, the governor can decide that without really any public input.
Right.
Well,
so what my bill did, and I'll reintroduce it every opportunity that I have, what my bill did was basically define an Oregon law that for a National Marine Sanctuary to be created inside Oregon's 3-mile waters, that they need legislative approval. So
right.
the governor, just like any other piece of legislation, the legislature would have to approve, the governor can sign, and then move forward. And I talked to her about it, and she said that she didn't want to give up any more of her authority than she already has. And I said, this is a win for you, Kate. What are you doing? And she disagreed. So,
we already know that she isn't interested in representing the people, only special interests. Let's take a break here. Well, this will be a last break, and then I'll kind of let you finish up when we come back. Anyway, we're going to give something away first. This is from the Lucky Star Chinese Restaurant. They're located at the foot of Newmark on Highway 101, and just about everybody knows where they're at. They're open 7 days a week from 11 in the morning to 9:30 at night, and you can dine in, and by the way, the service is great there. Rob's nodding his head because before the show, he mentioned that he's going to stop there and grab dinner for...
Oh, yeah, and I can tell you right now, it's one of those dinners that, you know, like you said, you get a whole pile of rice and a big old thing of chicken, and it lasts 2 days, and it feeds
yeah.
the whole family, and it's very well priced. You can't get this at pretty much any other restaurant.
No, not for the price. It's really good food. Servings are huge, and what they're offering is the biggest and baddest thing on the menu. It's their house special. Now, this includes barbecued pork, sweet and sour pork, fried shrimp, spring roll, pork fried rice, and pork chow mein. A lot of food, and I'm going to give this away to caller number 3 at 541-267-2124. So dial the phone right now and be caller number 3, and you will win this house special dinner from the Lucky Star Chinese restaurant, and we'll be right back.
It's time to play Coos Trivia.
I'll take Coos business for 200, please.
Question: who is Jim Vick?
The owner of Jim Vick Auto Sales on Broadway in Virginia in North Bend.
Correct! What year did Jim Vick get into the car business?
Easy, 1961.
Wait, really? I didn't know that.
It's true. Did you know I just bought my pre-owned BMW from him?
I've noticed some great-looking Mercedes and Lexus models on the lot as well. I need to head down there now.
You do. And remember, Jim says,
if I can't save you money, I don't deserve your business.
Today's newer vehicles are more dependable than ever before. Qualified technicians keep them operating at peak efficiency. Bayshore Auto Repair, North Bayshore Drive in Coos Bay, have all the proper equipment and training to service and repair today's high-tech vehicles. Bayshore Auto Repair believes that care of their customers is just as important as the care they give your vehicle. Call 269-2700 for an appointment to keep your car, truck, or RV in top running condition. Bayshore Auto Repair. Top quality service and excellent customer care are their most important goals.
Slip away to the tropics. The tropical decor at the new Copacabana, North Bend's newest and friendliest night spot. The Copacabana is located at 645 Virginia Avenue and features not only a full-service bar for all your favorite adult beverages, but offers hamburgers, seafood, and appetizers to satisfy your munchies. They're open from 5 till midnight Monday through Thursday and 5 till 2:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday. At the Copacabana, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights are special with a live DJ for your dancing and listening pleasure. That's the Copacabana, 645 Virginia in North Bend. Stop by tonight.
We're back. It's the Jim Bice Show. There he is, Jim Bice.
Welcome back to the Jim Bice Show. I'm gonna go ahead and turn this over to you. We've only got like 8 minutes left, and I know you've got a lot of ground you wanted to cover, so I'm gonna let you cover it, and I'm gonna try to keep my mouth shut.
No guarantees.
No, Jim.
I appreciate the time and the conversation. I mean, these are just some of the crazy stuff that's going on in that marbled house up there in Salem, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it with you and everybody out there that's listening. I mean,
is there any chance whatsoever that the Republicans can ever regain control of Salem?
Oh, heck yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Especially after, see, so we're in a kind of a nexus of some interesting times right here. If we do lose a House seat, which you know, there it's probably the scariest time in a long time that we've had that kind of concern. We have 25, they have 35, Democrats have 35.
Right.
You're in a situation with the 3/5 majority, supermajority to raise taxes. Newt Bueller, of course, as I mentioned before, right. He's my pick for governor. He's going to be leaving. He is a Republican elected in Bend.
Right.
Which is an 11-point D district.
Okay.
Margin.
So he beat out the Dems in a heavily Democrat area.
And we have to find a candidate that can do the same. And Mark Johnson, representative from Hood River, just left to take over as president and CEO of the Oregon Business and Industries Council.
Oh, okay.
And that's a 5-point D district that he's a Republican that has been reelected 4 terms up there in that district, which is going to be a tough fight. We have Julie Parrish, who's another good colleague out of the just north of Salem area. I'm trying to think of but she's a huge target for them because of the fact that she was the chief petitioner in getting this hospital provider tax on the ballot for everyone to vote for. And so the Democrats are gunning after her, and that's a 6-point Democrat district that she wins as a Republican. So we got a lot of fight ahead of us in our various districts, and just to hold our 25 seats.
Right.
But then we have other seats like Representative McEwen is a 1.5-point D district here in Coos Bay.
Well, here's a problem. And I've harped on this. The idiot Republicans, I wanted to say that twice here locally, don't even have any candidates. How in the hell are we going to change things when we've got a major political party that's so damn stupid that they can't seem to get their act together and groom candidates in advance. They choose their candidates by a show of hands at the meeting before the deadline to file.
Well, actually, you have a candidate in Terry Greer that has filed against Kathy McEwen.
Right.
And she filed early. But then you have Paul Evans that is up in in West Salem, that is a Democrat in a I want to say it's a 2.5 or 3 point district that is Democrat that has a potential of turning red. So when you add the various transportation taxes, the hospital provider tax, the minimum wage increases, the inability for the Democrats to deal with PERS, the fact that they're moving this cap and trade discussion that's going to cost the citizens $700 million. You add the votes for the Senate Bill 719 or the gun bill, which and I encourage all the listeners out there, if you go to YouTube, type in search David Brock Smith and watch my floor speech on that Senate Bill 719. I please encourage you to do so. It was a bad bill, and it should never have passed.
The only purpose of that bill was to facilitate firearms registration. That's the only purpose of that bill. Because it will absolutely accomplish nothing other than that.
So some good things. We wanted to talk about some good things. We've had enough of the bad real quick. We were able to get a fishing vessel permit bill passed. It's a good bill. And it'll allow our younger fishermen to stay in the business. And while adding security for retirement for our older fishermen who are retiring, but more importantly, keeping the permits local. So right now, let's say, Jim, you're a fisherman. You own that permit. You own a boat. And Rob wants to become a fisherman because he's much, much younger than you, right?
Hell, everybody's much younger than I am.
And so what this does, you could sell it to Rob at whatever terms you guys want to work out on a napkin and get it notarized, right? But let's say Rob says, you know, screw you, Jim, I'm pissed off at you. I'm not gonna hold accountable to that. And he goes ahead and takes the boat and takes off. Well, it would take you probably up to a year, year and a half to go through the courts process in order to get your fishing permit back and so forth. This expedites the process so you can get your fishing permit, because a lot of our older fishermen are using these bills or these permits as their retirement.
Oh yeah.
Their permits are worth $300,000-$400,000.
I know.
And they're finite. And so I want to be able to make sure that, you know, we keep that permit in Coos Bay, we keep that permit in Bandon, we keep that permit in Port Orford, we keep that permit in Gold Beach and Brookings, and so it doesn't go up to the big Newport fishermen boats, and yet allow younger people and the security for the older folks that are retiring out to sell it for sale by owner to the younger person to keep it going, because if he faults on it, you have the ability now to go back and get it immediately and go out and either resell it or start utilizing it so you can make your payments. I've been really centered on workforce folks, our middle income folks. There's a lot of programs in our state that assist, favor, however you want to look at it, in our low income families. I personally think that if government got out of the way, that the low income families don't need a hand up. They need a handout. They need a hand up.
Yeah.
But I've been focusing on workforce housing, our middle income class housing. Was able to pass a incentive bill for our workforce that isn't, there's six others in the state that look at 60% or below the average median income, so low income folks. I was able to pass one that looks at 120% or below of average median income, so that we can meet that middle class sector that is still struggling themselves, because they're the small, the folks that are, the guy that works at Les Schwab and his wife that's working at the at the local coffee shop or whatever, that are struggling. And so that's a multifamily housing bill.
Now, unfortunately, some of those people you're trying to help are going to be unemployed when the new minimum wage kicks in.
Right. And I tell you, I have a brother that lives in Portland. He's in the service industry. And his partner, she has a restaurant and bar in downtown Portland. And they're struggling right now as that
It's going to get worse.
Yep.
Yep.
Jim, I can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate you coming in. We need to do this a little more frequently.
Agreed.
and just keep the people up to speed on what the crooks in Salem are doing to us. And, of course, we are out of time. This 2 hours just flies by every week. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I really do appreciate each and every one of my listeners. And we will be back next week. And until then, you go out there and you have a great week.